Well, at this time of the year, there are a lot of demands on our time and attention, but you and I need to make sure that planning to file taxes is on that to-do list. You need to know just what we need to get done before the end of 2013 and what we can take care of after, but still count it toward this tax year. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Scott Franklin is a certified public accountant, holds a law degree. He's a third-generation CPA, second-generation lawyer, a lifelong resident of Milwaukee. And he joined Kohler & Franklin, LLC in 1995, concentrates in the firm's tax, estate planning, and business advisory and litigation support practices. Experienced writer and teacher on both accounting and legal topics. And he joins us today from our Milwaukee studios. Scott, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Thanks for inviting me back.
I really appreciate it. Let's get right to it. Let me first give the number. If you have a question or comment, maybe you've got a tax question, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Let's begin, though, by taking a look at what needs to be done before the end of the calendar year to count for our 2013 taxes.
While the usual suspects continue that has been longstanding advice, which is to make sure you pay in your real estate tax bills for people with property, pay in quarterly estimates for state income taxes, even though Wisconsin does not require the quarterly estimate to be paid until January 15th of the following year. If it's paid in by December 31st, that qualifies as a deduction on the federal tax return. You do have to watch out for those taxpayers that may have an alternative minimum tax. Prepaying these deductions doesn't always equate into a tax savings, and so there should be some level of tax guidance from your tax preparer, or at a minimum, you look at your 2012 tax return, and if you had the alternative minimum tax back then, you probably would have it this year, and so it's not as critical to prepay the taxes to take it as a deduction. Concerns, particularly new for 2013, is for higher income taxpayers to make sure that their federal tax estimates are adequate in light of the income taxes that are going up as a result of the Affordable Care Act. And there's been a lot of media coverage about difficulties in signing up for health insurance through the federal exchange, through the websites and so forth. A lesser discussed issue is that as a result of the need to finance the health insurance reform, income taxes are going up primarily for high-income taxpayers. Generally, people with more than $200,000 of adjusted gross income on a single tax return or $250,000 on a joint return. People who exceed those thresholds, their wage income will see an additional 0.9% tax. Call it an additional Medicare tax that helps to fund it. And for those people above the two thresholds I mentioned, there's an additional 3.8% net investment income tax that is levied on capital gains, interest, dividends, and so forth. The end result is somebody whose income is high enough compared to these thresholds might owe more taxes than what they owed last year, even if their income is about the same. And so a lot of our clients are just wanting to make sure that they're paid in sufficiently so that they don't have surprises come April. Mm-hmm. In most cases, software should have taken these additional taxes into account when establishing quarterly estimates for people. Every once in a while, due to change in circumstance, we're finding that clients are well advised to at least crunch the numbers and make sure that their liabilities are what they think they are. For somebody who pays quarterly estimates, the federal quarterly estimate isn't due until January 15th, so there's plenty of time. But a lot of clients also like to have it done through paycheck withholding through their employer. And for 2013 withholding, that means making sure that the numbers are crunched and your paycheck is adjusted in the last 2 weeks of the month coming up here. Even for somebody who may not be subject to the additional Affordable Care Act rules, it's always a good idea to crunch the math and make sure your withholding on your paycheck is what it should be based on, at this point, you have almost a whole year's income, and you should be able to go out and play around with some of the software programs if you do it yourself or with your paid preparer to be able to see if your withholding is enough so that you won't owe or won't owe a lot. People that get a huge refund are making a tax-free loan to the government, so sometimes clients at the end of the year, if they know they're getting a large bonus, will also adjust their withholding down so that, again, they're not being extremely overpaid and getting a big refund back on April 15th.
Oh, okay. So lots of good things to think about. Scott, I appreciate those comments very much. Any other kinds of purchases that we – you know, I'm not sure what they might be, but certainly we, my wife and I have been doing our charitable donations and making sure that we've got all those. But are there any purchases that would help out?
Well, in terms of purchases of just buying items, there's nothing really I would recommend on the purchasing front. However, if somebody was so inclined to make energy efficiency purchases for new windows, et cetera. This appears to be the last year of the energy efficiency credit as currently enacted. And the credit is a maximum of 10% of the cost of energy efficient windows, doors, et cetera, up to a maximum of $200 credit. And that $200 credit is limited in that there's a lifetime in quotes, maximum tax credit you could have claimed for energy efficiency products over the last several years.
Okay.
So if somebody put new windows in 3 years ago and are putting in another new window today, you're probably not going to qualify for the tax credit. But if you've never done it and you want to do it in the next 2 weeks, you could get up to a $200 tax credit. Charitable contributions is always a good thing. It doesn't matter if you write a check or if you put it on a charge card. As long as the charity receives your payment before the end of the year and they give you the proper acknowledgement, that's fine. One of the things we've had a few clients more interested in doing this year than in past year, now that the stock market seems to have recovered, especially this year, a lot of clients have stock that has appreciated. And if you are so inclined to make a charitable contribution, you might be inclined to make it as a gift of stock. And if, for instance, somebody purchased 100 shares of General Electric at $40 a share and the stock is now worth $50 a share, they could make a donation of those 100 shares, taking a deduction of 100 times the 50, even though they only paid 100 times 40, they're getting the full deduction for the full value, even though it didn't cost them that much to buy the stock, and they're not paying capital gains taxes on the $1,000 profit. So in an increasing stock environment, it's a very popular year end technique to make gifts of stock. It's the best of both situations. You get out of the capital gains tax. The charity gets the full benefit of the value of what they received. And then the charity can turn around and sell the stock the next day after they receive it. They get the cash. And, of course, the charity doesn't pay taxes on it either.
Dave in Deerfield has a question for you, Scott. So let's go there. Dave, hi. Thank you very much for calling.
Hello. The question is, it's kind of it's around the conversion of traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs.
Okay.
Now, does that have to be completed by the end of the year, or does that go to the tax filing deadline also? Could you do that in January or February?
Well, generally speaking, when you do a Roth conversion, it's done during the calendar year. There are circumstances where once you do the conversion, when you complete your actual tax return, if it turns out you shouldn't have done the conversion because your income wasn't the way you expected it, it's possible to undo the conversion after the fact in the spring. But the initial conversion, in order to count as a 2013 Roth conversion, does have to be completed in the next 2 weeks.
So it has to be done. Okay, and then you talked about the tax. What is the threshold for joint filing for a couple till you jump up to the next or move up to the next tax bracket? Or what is the figure, 75,000 or 90? I forgot what.
For 2013, the for a joint tax return, the 25% tax bracket starts at
$72,500
of taxable income.
Right.
And it jumps up at $146,000, jumps up to the 28% bracket.
Okay. And then if you do make a conversion from a traditional, and does that – you get the cash, you get the money – you're having the money, do you have to transfer that all into the Roth, or can you use some of those proceeds to pay the taxes? Does it have to be dollar for dollar, or can you I'm just using round figures. Take out $10,000 and only convert $9,000, and then you have $1,000 to use as you
– to cover the taxes, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
No, that's a good question. That's one of the issues with Roth conversions. If you are converting $10,000 from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA, that entire $10,000 has to move into the Roth IRA, and then you have to pay income tax on the $10,000 and get the money from other sources, be it savings or work income.
Or yeah, okay. I've probably heard these things before, but it all gets in your mind, and you're thinking of all the things you have to do by the end of the year. And I think that answered all my questions that I had on the conversion, and there's probably a lot of people that are thinking of doing that also, and hope it helps those people also.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your information, and Merry Christmas to you all.
Thank you.
To you as well. Thanks, Dave, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Talking today with Scott Franklin, the CPA, also a law degree. He's with the firm of Kohler & Franklin, LLC, in Milwaukee. He's a lifelong resident of Milwaukee. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer here today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Scott Franklin, a CPA, great to have him along today to talk with you and with me about taxes and what needs to get done before the end of the year for our 2013 taxes, and of course a whole lot more. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And, Scott, we're going to go to Laurel in Eagle River next. Laurel, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for being on. I really appreciate this. This past year, we had about three-quarters of a 40 logged, and we made some money on it. And I understand, I know it's in capital gains in some portions, but I'm not really sure how to do it.
Well, okay, what exactly again was the...
So logging.
Logging.
So you logged some forest land and made a profit on it, and now you're wondering how do you report that on your taxes?
Well, report it, and how? What can I take away from the expenses related to it? Because this is something that hadn't been logged for over 30 years.
Yeah.
So,
The sale of the logs, or did you sell the land, or did you sell the log? The trees themselves.
We had a logger come in, and then he paid us so much to take away the wood.
Okay. So.
Okay. She still has the land.
You still have the land, I guess is what I'm getting
at.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, I have never dealt with logging. We've had a couple farm clients over the years. I'm not familiar with. Specifically with the rules on logging, so I would have to defer. If you check out Larry's website, my contact information's on there. If you want to shoot me an email, I'd be happy to get the answer and respond back to you. In general, though, if you do have an activity, all of the costs involved in generating your income would be a deduction against it. So the cost of taking care of the trees may be a deduction. Advertising in order to get a hold of the person that bought the wood from you would be a deduction. More specific, I would have to do a little reading,
a little more work.
And educate myself.
Okay. There you go, Laurel.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Chris in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Scott and Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if there's a simple way of determining whether for a given person it's more advantageous to have a Roth IRA or a conventional IRA. I have been contributing to a Roth IRA for about the last 8 years, and I was listening to a financial show suggesting that it might be better for people to contribute to a conventional IRA, take the tax deduction now while I'm in a higher tax bracket, figuring I would be in a lower tax bracket in retirement.
And that's the general logic you would have. For those of the listeners who are not familiar, when you put money into a traditional IRA, the money goes in, you get a tax deduction now, it grows tax-free. When you take the money out, it's regular income tax at your ordinary income tax rates down the road. The theory being you're going to take it out at retirement, your income's less, your tax rate is less. Whereas a Roth IRA, you put the money in, you don't take a tax deduction now, and it grows tax-free, and when you retire, you take the money out. You never have to pay taxes on the money when it comes out. Another factor is for the original owner of a Roth IRA, there is no requirement to take minimum distributions once you turn age 70 and a half, which means you could put the money into a Roth IRA and leave it grow and grow and grow indefinitely and never touch it, and it could pass on to your heirs, and then they could start taking the money out, not pay taxes. Whereas with traditional IRAs, you do have to start taking the money out at age 70 and a half. I don't know that there's necessarily a clear-cut answer on taking the money, on whether you should put the money into a Roth versus a traditional IRA. We have had many clients rethink their approach similar to what you were just alluding to, in that they're not necessarily seeing their income any lower at retirement. And so when they are putting the money into the regular IRA and getting the tax deduction, they're not saving anything at retirement, because for whatever reason, the IRA has grown and they have to take out a large distribution, or they've got a lot of Social Security income, or they've done well in other investments and have investment dividends, capital gain income that helps them support themselves in retirement. And so there isn't the tax savings or the lower tax rate. What I'm seeing a lot in my practice is the people that are putting money away will try and do it into a Roth IRA for the intangible of they don't have to take the money out at retirement, so that should keep their taxes more under control at retirement because it's tax-free. They're not as worried about the lack of a minimum distribution. It is more looking at what all their sources of income are. And in the current climate, depending on your tax bracket and your depending on your income, your tax bracket is probably higher now than it was a few years ago. And in fact, again, as part of the Affordable Care Act tax consequences, there's an additional 39.6% tax bracket for people with higher incomes. Generally, people with over $400,000 of income, but it could affect a married filing separate taxpayer with as little as $225,000 of income. So I do think the old logic of taxes will be lower in the future, take the deduction now, pay the taxes later, isn't going to hold as true going forward, especially if the budget dilemma continues and Congress needs to raise money for other reasons besides health care.
All right.
Great. That helps. So I took out a Roth IRA this year, and I was thinking about converting it to a traditional IRA, but I think with your information, I'll keep it as a Roth.
All right.
And I just want to point out, you cannot do a Roth to regular conversion. So once the money is in a Roth, it is in the Roth.
Okay.
That's great information.
Thanks a lot for calling, Chris. Appreciate it. Someone else wondered, you mentioned traditional IRAs and you have to start taking them out at 70 and a half. Somebody else said, well, I'm still working. Do I still have to take out at 70 and a half?
The rules for an IRA are that you have to take them out when you hit 70 and a half. If you are involved in a profit-sharing plan or a pension plan through an employer, those minimum distributions are deferred until you actually retire.
Got it. Okay. Bill in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, my mom recently passed, and I understand, like, with a interest account, any interest after date of death is reportable by the estate or the heirs. And anything before death is reportable by her on her final return. My question is regarding property taxes. We generally pay our property tax in December. Is any of that deducted on her return, or is it all then on the estate return?
It would be deducted on the estate return, as the estate is paying those taxes all at that point in time.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Bill, for calling. Appreciate it. Joel on Facebook wondered or commented regarding the landowner with the logging income from timber. That income from timber is treated differently than regular income and has its own tax rates. So she needs to talk with a CPA who specializes in timber tax income, which makes, I'm sure you'd agree with that, Scott.
Yes, exactly.
Bob wonders, my wife and I are selling 15 acres of native prairie to a nonprofit conservation organization. Since we strongly support this type of conservation, my wife and I want to gift $7,000 back to the nonprofit. Are there limits on the amount that can be gifted to one organization?
Any charitable contribution, you can contribute as much as you want. The issue is whether or not you can fully take the deduction on your tax return in a particular year. Generally, if you write a check to a charity, the total of all the cash gifts you make to a charity in any year can only be deducted to the extent it does not exceed 50% of your income. If you are making a donation of capital gains property, like my stock example from earlier, or if you're donating land or other non-cash items, generally you're limited to deducting 30% of your income in terms of value each year. And any time you would donate more than 30% of your income, it just gets carried over into the next year and has to be used up within 5 years. So there's no limit on what you give to a particular charity. The limit is how much you can deduct against your income in a given tax year.
Okay, makes good sense. And Joe and Toma, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, good afternoon. And Scott, my question, I have tax breaks for 2013. They're gifts of tuition or medical care. And the ruling, as I read it, says taxpayers don't owe federal gift tax on amounts paid for tuition or medical care for another person. However, that payment must be made directly to the provider. My question is, if I pay the medical bills for my son and his wife, recently had the baby there, for another family member, is not on my tax as a dependent, who can claim the medical deduction on the Schedule A 1040?
It's a good question. So basically, you've correctly stated the rule that is in terms of the gift tax. Gift tax deductions are gift taxes are not levied if you make a payment directly to a school or directly to a doctor of whatever amount. So in your case, if you want to pay the hospital bills for a new granddaughter, you would be able to write the check directly to the hospital or to the doctor, and there's no gift tax ramification. In terms of who takes the tax deduction is probably not going to be claimed on your tax return because even forgetting about the gift tax, the limits on taking an itemized deduction for medical care would have to be somebody who is your dependent. So if your children are not dependent on your tax return, you're paying medical expenses on their behalf. Generally, unless you're really providing a lot of support to them, you're not going to be able to take the deduction. As far as them claiming the deduction, they're not going to get the deduction because they haven't made the payment. So
out of luck.
There's not a lot to help there. I also want to point out that another Affordable Care Act impact on the tax return this year is that up until 2012, medical expenses were deductible to the extent they exceeded 7.5% of a person's income. Starting in 2013, medical expenses are deductible only if they exceed 10% of adjusted gross income. With the exception of people that are close to the mid-60s. So the deduction, I'm just double-checking that age bracket right here, the 10% deduction is for people that have attained age 65 or older by the end of this year. So all those clients of ours that have routinely added up their medical bills it's going to take a lot more medical bills now to come up with a deduction.
So yeah. Basically, then our paying it, it just that evaporates. Nobody gets credit. We don't qualify for it if we pay their bill, and they don't qualify because they didn't pay it.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, Scott, thanks very much. I didn't know that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Joe, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. That's a question some others may have. Don in Wausau, it's your turn. Hello.
Hi, Scott and Larry.
Hi.
My wife is retiring this month. I'm retiring next month. And I'm wondering if for 2014, if we need to file a quarterly estimate or anything.
The need to file estimates would depend on what your income is and the sources of the income. Most retirees are going to be collecting a pension or tapping into their IRA. If they have the ability to specify what withholding should be from the IRA or the pension, you can withheld, and then you don't have to pay quarterly estimates. Social Security benefits as well, you may tell the government to do federal tax withholding, but not state withholding from Social Security checks, so that it minimizes or eliminates the need for quarterly estimates. If you are going to be living in retirement on a lot of interest and dividends and capital gains from investment accounts where you don't have the ability to have withholding from a monthly check, that's the scenario where you would pay quarterly estimates.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I have another question, if I may.
Sure.
Well, we're have qualified, or we've are going to be receiving Affordable Care Act coverage, and we're limiting our income to our Social Security and interest and that sort of thing, leaving our 401ks alone. My understanding is that the qualification for subsidy is based upon our 2014 income. And are you seeing any problems with this? Is there any surprises that I'm not seeing here?
In terms of just keeping your income down?
Yes.
No, and that's a good technique. It also applies not only for health insurance. We've seen this for several years with people just doing it with the regular Social Security, not necessarily the health care that's coming in, but also for the Medicare premiums. And it is a good idea to minimize and adjust your taxable income so that you can have lower income to meet these various thresholds. And for clients who have Roth IRAs, that's another benefit of building up Roth IRAs, because when the money comes out of a Roth IRA, it's tax-free, and therefore, dollar for dollar, one, you don't have to take as much money out of the investment account because you're not paying taxes on it, but then it keeps your income down for the thresholds for health insurance or Medicare, exactly as you're describing it.
There you go.
Yeah, our plan is we have sufficient savings to supplement our Social Security until we qualify for Medicare, and then at that point, when we no longer have to restrict our income, we can start drawing in our 401ks, and the additional benefit is the 401ks will continue to grow until that point.
Exactly.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Yep. Makes good sense. Don, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And there's another one where there'll be probably some other people saying, yeah, what about that? Julia in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about we created an IRA in August of 2013, and my husband was disabled as of the end of January, end of January of 2013, and I do not work. And we had this money that was, when he was working all those years and also in January, he's working through a local union for the employer, so he wasn't really a benefit employee. he was working, you know, just as a contract employee. There was no retirement plan available for him to contribute to working as a contract employee. So monies from the employers that he would work for would go into a national electrical annuity fund.
Okay.
When we transferred that, you know, after he was out of covered employment when he wasn't going to be working any longer or disabled, he was able to take that and transfer it, and he rolled that over into an IRA that we created. Is any of that deductible? As I was reading, it was kind of confusing, but it says deduction allowed in full if no retirement plan at work.
Well, if you put money into your own IRA out of your own wages, that money is generally going to be a deduction if you're putting it into a traditional IRA. The money that was put into an account through his employer that was then rolled over into an IRA would not be an additional deduction on his tax on your tax return, because I'm presuming there was some pre-tax benefit or it was an employer retirement contribution at the employer level that put it into that original national account. So the rollover would be a tax-free event and not a tax, and no tax deduction would be allowed. But whatever outside money that you're able to contribute into an IRA is deductible. You just want to watch out for limitations. If you are covered during a calendar year by an employer-sponsored plan, the ability to put the maximum into an IRA may be limited depending on how much income and how much IRA money we're talking about.
Right.
And so one of the things to do is if you want to fully fund a current year's IRA for 2013 is you wait until you prepare your 2013 tax return in the first couple months here of 2014, and then you are able to see exactly how much your income was, whether or not an employer put money away for you, and then you can crunch the numbers and determine what additional deductible amount you could put into your own traditional IRA.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. It's kind of a complicated thing. It's just done by a contract. It's not an employer set up.
Right.
It's just set up through the union hall. And then whatever employer, he may work for 20 different employers, they're all required to put in a percentage of his wages.
Right. And so that should result in him getting a W-2 from his employer that says he was covered by a retirement plan. It doesn't matter if it was a union plan or an employer-specific plan. It sounds to me like he was covered by an employer-sponsored plan of some type, which could, depending on income levels, impact your ability to put additional money into a freestanding IRA.
There you go. Good luck, Julia.
We never do get it. We never get a form, or we never get anything saying that, you know, that there's a retirement.
Never get a W-2?
We get a W-2, but it doesn't, you know, say that there's a retirement account contribution or anything.
I would, at this point, if you're interested in putting additional money into an IRA, I would say wait for all the year-end paperwork to come back from the employer, as well as and then you're able to determine whether or not you meet the criteria to put additional funds in.
And thanks a lot for calling, Julia. Appreciate it very much. Scott Franklin, our guest today, certified public accountant in Milwaukee with the firm of Kohler and Franklin, LLC. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your taxes today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, Larry Mueller here with my guest Scott Franklin, certified public accountant. with the Milwaukee firm of Kohler and Franklin, LLC. Great to have him with us. And, of course, thank you for listening in. Join us with your questions. We've got email at talk@WPR.org. You can phone us at 1-800-642-1234 or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Art in Milwaukee up next. Art, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the show. So evidently there is an age cutoff for contributing to, I presume, a traditional IRA. It's probably 70 and a half, something like that, that came up on software. So my spouse has exceeded that, and this year I do not expect to have earned income, but she does. So I'm wondering whether we can make whether I can make a IRA contribution based on her earned income, even though she's over an age limit.
The IRA contribution level or limit basically says that for a person, as long as between you and your spouse combined, you have at least the $11,000 of income between the two of you, you could each put $5,500 away into an IRA. If you're older than age 50, you can put an additional $1,000 per person into the IRAs, even if you don't have earned income yourself. So the age 70 and a half figure that I was mentioning is when you have to take minimum distributions out of the IRA. As long as you have earned income, you could still put additional money into the IRA after age 70 and a half. But at that point, most people are putting the money in and turning around and pulling it out a few months later. And so it might not make sense for an older person to continue to contribute, but you can still put the money in.
That had been my understanding also, but the software for an H&R Block for last year's tax return asked in terms of whether you could make the contribution whether you were over age, I think it was 70 or 70 and a half. I had not read that anywhere, but that's what the software did.
I'm not.
It's a new one on me.
I've not heard that before. I don't personally use H&R Block software and mm-hmm. would want to try and dig a little deeper into where they came up with that restriction.
Okay. There you go, Art. Thank you. Deb in Sturtevant, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have two questions. My daughter started getting LEAP funds this year. Would my claiming her as a dependent or can I claim her as a dependent affect her having a LEAP fund grant in the future?
So that's a college fund, of course.
Right.
When you say LEAP funds, are those I'm not familiar with that type of fund.
They're grants that are given for students that are 24 years of age and have financial necessity.
And okay.
Up so until this year, I had to report my income on her FICA, her FAFSA, and this year I didn't have to put my income on it, and she was eligible for it. But I think that's maybe because I'm not claiming her as a dependent.
Right. And so what happens is if this was a special fund for students that are older than 24, what that probably is related to is dependency exemptions are only available to the parent of a full-time college student who is under the age of 24. If she is older than 24 and has more than $3,000 or $4,000 of total income for the year, you will not be able to take her as an exemption. The question I would have is, does the grant money constitute taxable income? If it doesn't, and she has no other source of income, and you're supporting her, but you're totally supporting her other than she's getting a few $1,000 grant, you probably are still able to take her as a dependency exemption.
My other question then has to do with my 401k. In a few years, I plan on retiring. Can I take out a portion of that as a lump sum to pay off some debts so I can function better in a retirement and then leave the rest of it there until I wish to make monthly withdrawals later on?
Yes. As long as you're older than age 59 and a half, you can take out as much or as little from any retirement account, 401k, IRA, profit sharing plan, no problems. You could take out some this year, nothing for another 3 years, and take some money out. The only rule is, the only requirement is by the time you turn 70 and a half, you have to take out a minimum level. But until that point, as long as you're at least 59 and a half, you can do whatever you want with that money. It is subject to income.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I've taken out the lump sum, then and by the time I get 70, would that lump sum then count against what my mandatory withdrawals would have to be?
It will, because the mandatory withdrawals are based on what your income, what the account value is as of the end of the year. So the 2014 minimum distribution for people with a distribution requirement is based on the December 31, 2013 ending value, and there is a rate, a percentage table that the IRS publishes, and it looks at what your life expectancy is. And for instance, it might say that if you're 70 years old, you'd have to take out 1/25th of the account balance. The next year, you take out 1/24th, and so on until the account gets depleted. And these figures are based on the ending value the prior year.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's see, we have Patricia in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Good morning, Scott and Larry. I had one comment, and now in listening to some of these other folks, I had two comments to make. One was in regard to people seem to think that when you convert a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, you have to do it 100% of it. You can do that over several years period. It involves more paperwork, but then your taxes don't increase that much when you have to pay the taxes on that traditional IRA. And my other comment was, I did work after 70 and a half, and I did not have to take out my required minimum distributions until I retired, and I still was able to contribute to my Roth those years that I was still working after 70 and a half.
Hmm. Okay. Thanks for calling. Scott, comment?
The Roth IRA strategy, we have lots of clients that do that. It spreads the tax pain out. As far as the second comment about not needing to take money out of an IRA at age 70 and a half, I would have to double-check the regulations. As I mentioned earlier, I know that retirement plans provide you with that out. I was not aware that a regular vanilla IRA also would allow you to have that deferral.
Joyce wonders, or found herself in an interesting situation, underemployed. She was underemployed, and then due to health changes for her aging mother, she found herself providing care for her. She, as well as family members, felt I should be compensated for the care. I've been receiving some compensation from my mother, but no taxes have been taken out. How do I need to approach filing tax returns for 2013? I'm married and we file jointly, and I have some income from other part-time jobs in which taxes are taken out.
My first comment would be, we have looked this up before for other clients, and wages paid to a relative would not be a medical expense deduction for the mother. So it doesn't help the mom's tax situation to make a payment. As far as the daughter who's getting the money, if this is legitimate compensation for services rendered, it should be reported as income. the government might say that the mom should be filing payroll tax returns and doing Social Security and Medicare withholding and reporting a Form W-2 at the end of the year for the total compensation.
But a mother would be eligible to gift a daughter at least, what, how much is per year?
Exactly. The mother could give up to $14,000 a year in cash or whatever to a child, and so that would be the next suggestion. Let's not call it compensation. Let's just say that
it's a gift.
Mother making a $14,000 or less gift to the child, and even if it's more than $14,000, the gift tax would apply, but no tax liability would be due unless a single parent has more than $5 million.
Oh, with that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. Stay with us. If the thought that tax day is less than 4 months away raises your blood pressure a little bit, probably you're not alone. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. There are things you need to get done before the end of 2013 for it to count for this tax year, and some of them can make a big difference in how much you owe. Scott Franklin is a certified public accountant. He holds a master's or a law degree, He's a third-generation CPA, second-generation lawyer, longtime resident of Milwaukee. He joined Kohler and Franklin LLC of Milwaukee in 1995. Experienced in the firm's tax, estate planning, business, and litigation support practices. Scott, thanks again for being with us today.
Sure, no problem.
Been a lot of fun so far. You know, do you want to go back to where we were sort of at the news break? We were talking with someone who had no, we weren't. Actually, it was an email, I believe, I got from a woman who had been paid by her mother some income and wondered if she had to pay taxes on it. Your comment was, well, if it could be considered a gift as well if it was $14,000.
Right. And then what happens is anytime you make a gift during the calendar year, a cumulative gift to any one person of more than $14,000, you have to file a gift tax return that puts the government on notice that you are making a gift in excess of the exemption amount. However, no tax liability will be due in any particular year unless your cumulative gifts exceed $5.1 million or you've over your entire life. So generally, for most taxpayers, you could probably call it a gift, do the paperwork, and not have to worry about income taxation issues.
There we go.
I did also want to mention another tax law change for 2013 and for people that participate in an employer-sponsored flexible spending account.
Okay.
Through their jobs, up until this year, it was a use-it-or-lose-it proposition, which meant that when you made your election at the beginning of the year and how much money you were going to put into the FSA, if you used it up, great, it was a tax-free benefit. If you said you were going to put away the maximum or put away $2,000 and you only used $1,000, you forfeited the rest of that money. Just within the last couple of months, the rule was changed, and the IRS will now permit you to roll over $500 from 2013's unused FSA balance into the next year to kind of lighten the pain of the use it or lose it rule. The employer still has to dot the I's and cross the T's at their end so that their plan allows the carryover, But assuming the employer is able to do that, that's another reason that an employee should participate in an FSA to get a pre-tax deductible benefit to cover expenses that otherwise would not be deductible on the tax return.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Unfortunately, I know the rate went from the FSA amount was $5,000 and it went to $2,500. So that was kind of unfortunate for people who had more than $2,500.
Correct. And that $2,500 is in effect for 13 and 2014.
Yeah. Ann in Eau Claire. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning or afternoon. My husband and I bought a rental property in 2013, putting 25% as a down payment out of our savings. Is any of that deductible, and if so, over what period of time? And then second question, it does produce income, or we'll be having an income stream starting January, but we don't necessarily need it. So if we pay down the mortgage with additional payments, are they deductible, and if so, over what period of time?
Sure. Is the investment the rental property, is that residential or is it commercial property?
Residential.
Okay. So when you buy a rental property, you will be able to take depreciation over 27 and a half years, which means that if you paid $200,000 for it, you can deduct 1/27th of the purchase price over the next 27 and a half years. As far as the repayment of the mortgage, the payment of the mortgage itself is not deductible. What you're doing is you're taking a deduction for the entire purchase price. So from a tax perspective, it doesn't matter if you paid $200,000 in cash for a piece of property that you're renting or if you paid $100,000 cash and had a $100,000 mortgage on it. The repayment of the mortgage, if it exists, is not a second deduction because, as I just mentioned, you're deducting the actual purchase price. The interest expense on the mortgage is deductible. And if this is personally owned by you and your husband, you're going to file a Schedule E on your personal tax return. The deduction offsets rental income, as well as any other rental property expenses you have. To the extent that your total income is under $125,000, any rental losses you generate will be fully deductible. After your income is up to in excess of $150,000, any rental property net loss is not deductible in the current year. It carries forward and offsets future income. So I guess the short answer is the mortgage payment itself is not deductible. The value of the property you bought is deductible over time, and depending on what your income is, it certainly offsets the rental property income, and it may or may not offset other income on your tax return. And so then the second question was if you pay off the mortgage in advance from various sources, again, there's no special deduction available for paying off the mortgage. You're still depreciating the real estate over 27 and a half years.
There you go. Good luck, Ann. Thank you for calling. Judy wonders, my husband has a life insurance policy for $22,000, has a loan against it of $12,000. On the annual payment notice, it indicated that the policy's total loan balance is now 80% or more of cash value, and if not paid off, will cause it to terminate with taxable ordinary income reported to the IRS. It has a current cash value of $2,200. My thought is to cash it in as we don't plan to pay the loan. Does that sound reasonable to you?
Reasonable to cash it in. Yes, and we have had several clients with the same problem where they've taken loans out, and for whatever reason, never made the payment, and it gets to the point where it does get reported as taxable income to the government, the rub is that you're paying taxes to the government on income. The income is going to be more than the taxable income is going to be more than the $2,200 cash that comes out of the policy when you terminate it. And so you're going to be paying taxes on money you never received, but it is still considered taxable income because of the loan being in excess of the value of the policy.
Oh. So take it out now.
So take it out and then figure out how much taxable income is generated and then pay estimated taxes to cover the tax liability.
Got it. Mike and Racine, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. A little setup so you understand the details here. I am employed in a normal salary job and just turned 50 this year and have always contributed the maximum to my employee 401k program, which because of the peculiarities of that program, I was considered a highly compensated individual such that I could not utilize the full $17,500 maximum that my employee offered if I had made a little bit less money year on yearly income. So I was limited to like 10,000 a year as opposed to 17,500. Now, reaching 50, they said I am available or I'm able to do a catch-up provision, which I have availed myself of, which makes up that difference, and now I am able to contribute $17,500. But the question I have, and nobody seems to be able to answer, and I haven't found it on my internet searches, is that if I am utilizing a catch-up provision in order to contribute more to my 401k than I normally had been able to, does that mean I cannot use a catch-up provision on my IRAs, which I also try to max out every year as a Roth IRA, which I don't qualify for a traditional IRA, only the Roth IRA?
Sure.
Do you understand my question?
Yeah. And for the listeners out there, what happens is when you put money into a 401k or an IRA or any other type of retirement plan, there's a general limit such that for 401k it's $17,500 per year, and for an IRA it's $5,500 a year. For people that are older than 50, they can put an additional $5,500 into a 401k above the $17,500, and they could put an additional $1,000 into an IRA over and above the IRA base amount. And so if your question is, does the fact that you're using the catch-up contribution for a 401k impact your ability to use the catch-up contribution on an IRA, I would say they are two separate things, and you could certainly do that. What my concern would be is if your income is too much with the employer that and just talking about being a highly compensated employee, if your income is too much and you're a participant in a 401k, you may not be able to take a full tax deduction for what goes into your regular IRA. But the catch-up provisions are two separate numbers, and the fact that you're using one doesn't prevent you from using the catch-up on the other.
Okay.
Well, I'm already not able to do the 401k tax deduction, so my concern was that I wouldn't have the, because of that highly compensated individual thing, is that I wouldn't be able to utilize both of them.
Yeah.
No, you should not have a problem using both catch-ups. The question is whether or not it's going to be an allowable tax deduction for you to put that extra money away.
There you go. Good luck, Mike. Thank you very much for calling. Patricia on Facebook asks for a clarification. Is the medical deduction 10% of income for those over 65 years of age?
No. What it is 10% of your income for everybody. If you're 65 or older, if they're keeping the 7.5% rule.
Oh, okay.
So basically, young people, taxes just went, the deduction just went up. You cannot take a deduction unless your medical is more than 10% of your income.
Tim on Facebook says, I retired earlier this year, but I have children who are under the age of 18 and now receive benefits each month. Will we need to file income tax returns for them? How does that work?
If the only income is their Social Security benefit that they're receiving, their tax return, their taxable income is probably going to be nil, so they would not have to file an income tax return. If they have other income, in addition to the benefits, they might have to file a return, but the Social Security benefits will likely be tax-free in any event.
Martha wonders, for married filed jointly, at what income level threshold would itemized deductions start to be limited or lost, and how does that work?
Okay, so what happens is the itemized deductions get phased out, get limited, not totally reduced to zero, but the benefit of itemized deductions gets eliminated as your income goes up. Prior to 2013, the restriction we're talking about had been repealed, but they brought it back last year for 2013. So, excuse me, if on a joint return, the itemized deductions and personal exemptions will begin to be phased out when somebody on a joint return has $300,000 of income. And if it's a single return, it's $250,000 of income would see the reduction of your otherwise allowed itemized deductions.
John wonders about taxes, assuming, let's say, and this relates to the news story earlier that the governor was considering eliminating income taxes for the state in lieu of that having raising sales taxes, what the tax implications of that would be for most people.
As the tax forms already allow, you are able to take a itemized deduction for the greater of sales taxes paid or state income taxes paid. And this rule was put in a few years ago because Congress already realized that there are states without an income tax, like Florida and Texas, I think Oregon as well. So all things being equal, assuming the federal rules stay the same, if a Wisconsin taxpayer no longer has Wisconsin income taxes to pay, there will still be a deduction for the sales taxes that they pay.
All right. And Kathy in Green Bay has a question for you. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I'm an enrolled agent, and I actually have an answer for the person who called about logging the woodlands.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long-term capital gain on Schedule D. And if she bought the land 30 years ago and the trees just grew, she didn't fertilize or do anything else to encourage their growth, there really aren't any expenses. So that's the answer on that one.
All right. Thank you.
And also one other thing, you cannot contribute to an IRA once you reach age 70 and a half.
Yep. There you go. Thank you so much, Kathy. Appreciate it. There's some information for the logger or the person who had her land logged. And for others who are, and that's correct on 70 and a half, is it not, Scott?
Yes. The rules vary. We do have clients with profit sharing plans and other type of retirement accounts that are able to put money away. A regular IRA would stop it at 70 and a half.
Denison Rippon, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering if it would be better to pay 2 years of property tax in 1 year and do that every other year, or pay the property taxes every year.
My preference with my clients is to have them pay it on a every year basis for two reasons. One, if you double it up, you may cause yourself to have a problem with the alternative minimum tax on the federal tax return. Additionally, on the state of Wisconsin tax return, there's an up to $300 credit on the Wisconsin return for property taxes paid. So even if you double your taxes up and get the federal deduction and you don't have an AMT problem, you're losing out on the $300 Wisconsin benefit. And the third issue would be oftentimes real estate tax bills, your largest itemized deduction, largest component of your itemized deduction, depending on the math, if you double up in every other year in that off year, you might only get the standard deduction. Depending on how the numbers work out, you may not be benefiting yourself from doing it. And so that's a situation where working with a tax planner or some tax projection software to crunch the numbers to see what makes sense would really be recommended before just doing it blindly.
Yeah. You need to, I think, figure it out. I know someone who does their does that, but they also double up on their, you know, donations to church and other charities, and they double it up, and then one year they, and then the next year they take the standard deduction. But
and again, it goes to looking at the numbers and whether or not it makes sense. Some people might push back deductions if they know, for instance, at the end of 2012, knowing that 2013 tax rates were going up, people deferred deductions from 12 into 13 to offset the income being taxed at higher tax rates. So it does work both ways, and you really do need to look at the numbers and crunch them to make an informed decision.
Someone wondered about converting a 457 plan to a Roth plan. Would that ever make sense, or does that make sense?
Sure. And basically, you can convert anything to a Roth IRA. I'm not sure if you would have to first convert the 457 into convert that to a regular IRA and then roll it into a Roth. It makes sense to do it. If, again, we talked about this earlier, you have the cash available to pay the taxes that will be imposed on that conversion.
Well, Scott, this has been a real great program for me, and I'm sure for a lot of other listeners as well. I learned a lot, and I really thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Hopefully, well, I'm sure we'll have another chance to visit. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Scott Franklin does a great job, doesn't he? He's a certified public accountant, has a law degree as well. He works with the Milwaukee firm of Kohler & Franklin, LLC, and great to have him along, and certainly we'll have him back to talk again about your taxes and mine. Again, that's Scott Franklin with Kohler & Franklin, LLC of Milwaukee. Tomorrow at 11, another edition of Garden Talk. John Hendrickson stops by to talk about, among other things, the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. That's coming up in January. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.